You're listening to the Resilient Fertility Podcast, a space where we explore the intersection of food and culture on the journey to motherhood. I'm Anissa Woodall, a holistic certified nutritionist and mother of two adventurous boys. Join me as I guide you on how to reconnect with your innate wisdom, develop a growth mindset, and harness the power of food and habit to embody the mother your child needs you to be. Whether you're planning to become a mother, trying to conceive, or are already a mother, you'll find valuable insights and practical tips to enhance your fertility and optimize your pregnancy. Tune in every other week for thoughtful and informative conversations about the power in your hands on your journey to motherhood.
Welcome to another episode of the Resilient Fertility Podcast. I'm Anissa Woodall, and today I'm going to be sharing with you about my experience of breastfeeding for 6 years. I have a lot to share. I'm not a lactation educator, licensed lactation educator, but I do feel like 6 years of breastfeeding has really earned me a certain amount of wisdom to be able to share. And that paired with my own experience of supporting women throughout their motherhood journeys postpartum. And really, postpartum is forever. And I find that so many people are often asking, or maybe not asking, but totally unprepared when it comes to postpartum and breastfeeding. And so I wanted to share this episode for those of you who are either planning to conceive and you know that you want to breastfeed your children, but you hear so many things from our modern culture that says that it's impossible or it's going to be hard or there's all these barriers to making it successful. Or if you're already pregnant and you are wanting this for yourself and your baby, I'm going to be reflecting on my own experience. And so in this episode, you're going to be hearing about how I prepared to successfully breastfeed. What is physiological mothering? How long you should be breastfeeding for, my experience with postpartum depression and what I did to navigate it, my true beliefs on breastfeeding while working full-time, why focusing on boosting your supply can actually be detrimental to your breastfeeding efforts. But before I get into it, I just want to address an issue that I think is often viewed differently when we're talking about breastfeeding, and it's that we're often looking at breastfeeding as what are the benefits? You'll always see like news headlines or new research papers making these claims of, oh, these are the benefits of breastfeeding. And I want you to perhaps, you know, I'll just suggest having a little mindset shift around this and say, what are the risks of not breastfeeding? Versus instead of saying, what are the benefits of breastfeeding? How about, what are the risks of not breastfeeding? Because when we look at it, breastfeeding is the biological default. It's not that they're added benefits, right? That's not anything additional. This is the default of how humans were designed to flourish and thrive. And so I think when we look at it as what are the risks, then it becomes a little bit more serious and more than just a simple choice, right? Because breastfeeding is not actually truly a choice, although we talk about it like that. You might hear women saying, oh, are you going to breastfeed your child? Like it's optional. And that's actually one of the things that I think I was perhaps a little bit naive about going into motherhood was, even though I knew it was something I wanted to do, I still felt like this reservation or this hesitation around truly trusting that everything is going to work out and that this is what is going to happen. So now I want to get into what I wish I knew about breastfeeding going into it. I think the first lesson was that breastfeeding is not actually a choice, but it's about honoring a physical cue, right? A physiological communication from your body that's saying, this is how you take care of your child. And for me, I knew I was going to breastfeed. My own mom had breastfed me for 2 years, despite raising two very young children by herself, practically. My dad worked a lot. She didn't have any support. She didn't speak English. And I knew that given her circumstances for being able to breastfeed me for 2 years, I knew that I was going to be able to do it. And it was something that she was very proud of as well, especially growing up in Iran. That was the norm, right? Like, people didn't have the privilege of having formula. Thankfully, I think there's a lot of pros that I've experienced in my own upbringing because my mom was not raised in this country. And breastfeeding and instilling the importance of breastfeeding was one of them. I grew up always knowing, like, I'm going to breastfeed my children. That was something that she felt very firmly about, despite everybody saying, oh, you should do formula, it's easier, or you shouldn't be with your baby all the time or whatever. She was like, no, that's not right. I know that this is right. And so I think I get that from my mom in the going against what other people are saying because it doesn't feel right, and really tuning into intuition. So thanks, Mom. I was 100% committed to making it work. So I perhaps this came from a little bit of a sense of lack of trust of in my own body's ability to breastfeed, because that led me to perhaps over preparing for my breastfeeding journey, meaning that I did everything I could to make sure that it wasn't going to be an issue. So I took lactation classes. I went to my local hospital. I wasn't even birthing at the hospital. I didn't take childbirth education classes there, but I went there and I was like, okay, I need to take a breastfeeding class and make sure that I'm going to be able to do this. And it was really funny because actually when I went into that lactation class, the lactation educator was like, why are you here? You could teach this class. Because I was like the only person in class, like raising my hand about the benefits of breastfeeding. And ironically, other things I was doing to prepare was I read Ina Mae Gaskin's Guide to Breastfeeding book. She also wrote The Guide to Childbirth. And highly recommend those books in general for learning about a little bit more about natural childbirth and breastfeeding. And I took notes on special remedies and herbs for treating breastfeeding complications and plugged ducts. Those did pay off. I did experience plugged ducts, which I'll get to. And I started seeing a woman who was a naturopath, a midwife, and an IBCLC, which is an international board certified lactation consultant. And I really just wanted her to be my partner, to be able to ask questions about breastfeeding whenever I did get pregnant. I consulted her about my preconception care and like what I could be doing to prepare. In hindsight, there was a lot more, I think, that she could have told me that I was perhaps already doing myself without her guidance. And I think when it really came down to it, it was really about what is our culture telling us about women's ability to breastfeed. And I think one of the things our culture was also telling me was that I shouldn't get too attached if it doesn't work out. There's always formula that you could lean back on. And of course, that's an option, right? Like, we all know that's an option. And there's this whole argument about fed is best. People will say that fed is best, meaning that, oh, we shouldn't be arguing or discussing this controversial topic about the benefits of breastfeeding, or rather the risks of not breastfeeding, because that babies should be fed anything to survive, right? Yes, fed is not best, but it is the bare minimum. Of course, babies need to be fed food. They need to stay alive. But I think when we have this dichotomy of fed is best, well, then we're leaving women in this place of not truly feeling confident in their ability and desire to want to breastfeed. And this leads me into another lesson that I've learned about breastfeeding, and it's that just how intertwined the mother-baby dyad is. The mother-baby dyad is this symbiotic relationship that a woman has with her baby. A woman is directly dependent on her baby for her own postpartum wellness. A baby is directly dependent on the mother for its own wellness as it's growing up. For a long time, much longer than our culture really wants to admit and warns you about, especially in the US, at least where we live, you're expected to be back and at it at 6 weeks postpartum. And it's in my state of Washington, thankfully, we're viewed as a progressive state, but women all people. It's quite an inclusive state too. We get minimum 12 weeks of paid leave, which is great compared to many other states, but it's still not enough. If you give birth, then you get an extra 4 weeks for like birth recovery. And so when coming back to this idea of the mother-baby dyad, we are so interdependent on each other. I wanted to share one experience that really drove this home for me. And it was that anytime I was away from my baby and my breasts started to get more and more full, that was directly related to my level of anxiety. I never experienced anxiety before becoming a mom. And there are, I think, very important reasons why I do experience it on occasion. It's my body trying to tell me that, hey, there's something to be concerned about. But it was so fascinating. I would, in my early postpartum, you know, I'd be like 2 or 3 months postpartum, and I would just crave a 30 minutes to myself without a baby attached to me. And so if my husband was home, I would leave the baby with him and I would go to the grocery store. And I just vividly remember waiting in the grocery store line. My breasts were starting to get really full. And I just had this like racing heart kind of feeling like I have to get back to my baby. I have to get back to my baby. And it wasn't like such a emotional thing. A lot of times anxiety is termed a like mood disorder. There was nothing disordered about this reaction, right? It was a very normal reaction. And I had this, again, like it wasn't like I would missed my baby. It was a very biological, I have too much milk in my breasts. Like this doesn't feel good. Like I have to get to my baby. Like my body was telling me I had to get to my baby. I had to do whatever. And so it was like that, the more milk I had, the more anxious I would feel. And that makes so much sense, right? Like when we think about how nature works, it's yes, being a new mom can be so tough, especially if you have a baby who cries a lot, who's uncomfortable, and is just needing much more. I think all babies need a lot of loving touch and being held and being listened to, but some need more than others. And that can feel really difficult, which is part of why like mothers aren't the only caregivers that should be caring for a baby. But coming back to this, I think it's really important to understand that biological intertwining of the mother-baby dyad and how your body is so great at communicating to you when you need to be with your baby. And your baby is amazing at communicating with you about what it needs, because they're very clear. Crying is really their primary form of communication. And you will learn, it's so amazing, but you will learn what those cries mean and you know what they're asking for. And sometimes it's just that they need to cry. And that's something that can feel really hard if you're not used to listening to big feelings. Another thing I wish I knew about breastfeeding was just how connected it would be to a baby's sleep patterns. When I first started nursing my baby, my first baby, I immediately noticed that he would always nurse to sleep. And it was just this like natural rhythm that we flowed into. And his sleep was directly intertwined with breastfeeding. For at least the first year, he did not sleep unless he had breastfed before that. With the exception of when he was with my mom on the days that I was working, he would fall asleep in the car, but no other, and that was like after I had nursed him. I would nurse him and then I'd have to let him go to be able to go back to see my clients. And thankfully my mom had brought him to see me at my office when I was working away from home with my second baby. I was working from home, so it was much easier to be able to sneak him into my visits. And at that point I was working exclusively with moms and or women who are preparing to become moms. So they very much understood and appreciated seeing a mother nursing her child on screen, not on screen, but while undergoing my one-on-one coaching. And So coming back to the connected interconnectedness with sleep, this was something that, again, I thought it was a choice to put your baby in a crib or to put your baby in the bed and be bed sharing or co-sleeping or whatever you want to call it. And it was just mind-blowing and like really quite laughable. My husband and I, we truly laughed at ourselves at how naive we were going into parenthood, because on our registry, we had added a crib and we're like, oh, this is what people put on their registries. And around like 3 months postpartum, we both looked at each other. We're like, this is a glorified towel rack. Why do we have this crib in our bedroom? Like, it's taking up way too much space. Our baby is only going to sleep attached to mom. So let's just get rid of this. And we sold it and never looked back, right? Now we have two kids in our bed. One is 6 years old and the other one is nearly three. And so it's funny to look at that and say, wow, like we thought we were just going to put our baby in a crib. And that just like thinking about it evolutionarily, and I'd like to think about this, I think about things like this a lot. Why would we put a baby in a completely different room from where it is 100% safe and its only home, which is the mother? And when you think about it like that, it's duh. Like, why would you ever do that? And that's, I think, I just wanted to shed light on the fact that like the biological norm, the safe, the healthiest norm is for the baby to be sleeping attached to mother. Breast sleeping, as Dr. James McKenna calls it. You can explore his work on safe bed sharing practices, biologically normal infant sleep. There's lots of resources out there. I can attach some resources as well to the show notes of this recording. But regardless of there being tons of research on what the biological norm is, I think the most important thing to consider is what is your intuition telling you, right? What does it feel right to do? Does it feel right to sleep separate from your baby? If that's the case, then by all means, do what feels right for you. Not every mother-baby diet is going to have the exact same needs 100% of the time. But at least in my own experience, mothering both of my babies and also finding huge communities of women who are like, wow, like we are going against the mainstream recommendations and it actually is the norm, like realizing like that's the norm. And it's, of course, there are going to be unsafe situations where it wouldn't be recommended to sleep with your baby, but those are also things that I wouldn't recommend anyway. Smoking, for example, being under the influence of anything, for example, and so much more.
Now is actually a great time to take a moment and share about an ebook that I wrote for pregnant and new mamas. As a newly pregnant mama, you're constantly bombarded with advertisements for baby products, and it may leave you wondering, do I really need these baby products? Or how will these benefit the development of my baby? I wrote The Natural Mama's Guide to Newborn Essentials because when I was a pregnant mama, I was tired of being sold products that I knew were not in alignment with the mother that I wanted to be. Through experiencing this dilemma myself, I am offering this guide to help conscious mamas realign with their values of minimalism, health promotion, and environmental respect when preparing for the newborn period. Touching on the 7 basic infant needs, you'll learn how to sift through the nonsense of popular baby products so you only buy what truly supports the nurturing of your baby. Here's what one reader, Lana B., had to say about it. This book is everything I wanted to know, but had to spend countless hours researching on my own before my own birth. I had always questioned why, and having a kid was no different. There seemed to be endless options for all the different gadgets, methods, services, etc., all making me question, do I actually need this? Especially as a first-time mom, I really didn't know and wanted to be prepared. Anissa shares her point of view in a loving and non-judgmental way that encourages you to give your baby only what they need and love the planet while doing so. A great resource.
End quote. So if you're feeling called to home birth, attachment parenting, full-term breastfeeding, elimination communication, going diaper-free, and instinctual parenting, then this is the perfect guide for you. So now I want to tell you about another
lesson I wish I learned before becoming a mother, and that is the other side of it. How much I have to set boundaries around breastfeeding a toddler. Because again, we're often told it's a choice of like how long we choose to breastfeed for or how long a mother-baby dyad breastfeeds for. And I always just told people, I don't know how long I'm going to breastfeed for. I'm just going to go for as long as it feels right. Like that was my answer. And another part of that answer was like going for as long as it feels like it's still benefiting and supporting both of us. We both still feel good doing it. And a lot of times we have these arbitrary timelines of, okay, I'm going to breastfeed for 12 months because that's when the pediatrician says I can switch to cow's milk, which like cow's milk is great. I give my kids raw milk all the time, but to think that it's a replacement for breast milk is just not the right kind of thinking. And when we feel like we have this choice around how long a child or a toddler breastfeeds for, yes, we have a choice, right? Like we can set the boundaries. But I was honestly like uninformed about like how hard it would be to set and enforce and continue to enforce those boundaries with a breastfeeding toddler. I just sharing about my own experience. Part of why I'm sharing this episode actually is because I am weaning my son on his third birthday. I'm hoping for this episode to be able to be released on his birthday. And it has not been easy. People often are asking me, how do you wean your child? What do I do to be able to wean my child? And in some ways, I feel like I have zero advice because it's so hard. With my first child, it was fairly easy. I thought he would never wean because he just loved breastfeeding so much. But I was pregnant with my second child. And my son was nearing 3 years old when my milk fully dried up. And he continued to nurse, but with empty breasts, just because of the pregnancy hormones, it tanked my milk supply. And I had zero milk, probably by mid-second trimester. And it was actually fairly easy weaning him. He would just try to nurse. It would be uncomfortable and I would tell him that. And then he'd look at me and he'd be like, Mom, it's empty. And I'd be like, okay, you can hold it. And so that was literally how we weaned. He recognized it was empty. He recognized it was hurting me. And so he just, instead of nursing, would put his hand on my breast and just hold it and use that to fall asleep. And I'll say he continued holding my breast to sleep probably until he was at least 5 years old. And I don't think that should be looked at in any way of negativity or like, you know, he's taking too long to grow up. I think what we should look at that is, wow, how many children are forced to grow up before they're ready? And when it came to weaning my second child, we've started with trying to night wean. And that has really fueled the decision to want to completely wean because he hasn't really night weaned and he's 3 years old. He still wakes up around 4:30, 5 a.m. screaming for milk. And he will not accept any food no matter how much we top him off in the middle, or not in the middle of the night, how much we top him off right before bedtime, making sure he eats throughout the day. Really just allowing him to eat intuitively and still really making sure there's no caloric requirement in the middle of the night, yet still he wants it. And of course there are many other needs and reasons for being drawn to the comfort of breastfeeding more than just hunger, but I constantly found that it was like if I did get him some food he would fall back asleep, and at least for another 30 minutes. But it was often this kind of dynamic of, okay, you're going to have to go with dad and he's going to give you food and then you can come back with mom. And he would only eat because he wanted to come back with mom. And it was a very interesting dynamic. And that whole experience, unfortunately, I think has just led us to wanting to wean completely, because I realized like he can't hold to the boundary. And if there is no milk, then it's just not an option. And eventually he's going to have to be able to sleep fully through the night. And that was my experience with how we have to set boundaries with our toddlers. And I actually remember on that same topic, I remember seeing a client before I became a mom who was still breastfeeding her daughter, who was like 5 years old. And that was like the oldest child that I had ever seen breastfeeding at the time. But it was just so fascinating to me, the dynamic between them, that in my own like hindsight judgment, I think was not the way that I would do things. This girl would breastfeed multiple times throughout our session. And she was constantly latching on to her mother's breast and sucking a couple of times and then getting off and then going and playing on an iPad and then coming back and sucking a couple of times. And it was just very disconnected, I guess I would say. And so one of the things that I've strived to do in my own like setting of boundaries with a breastfeeding toddler is if they're just like nursing out of boredom and they don't know what else to do, then it's actually a crutch. And it is actually trying to pacify them. And I started setting my own boundaries with my child of wanting to have the times that he's nursing truly be mindful, just as I would want him to be with his food. And when he's eating a meal, I want him to sit down and be present with his meals and enjoy his meals and just get to be there. I don't want him snacking all the time and grazing on the go and all of those things that don't support a healthy nervous system, a healthy digestive system. Because what we are doing as mothers raising young children is we are training them. We're helping them associate habits from young infancy and developing those skills to carry on into adulthood. And yes, nursing is for comfort, and it's okay to experience comfort with food. But where are we substituting and having that take the place of mindfulness and truly finding other ways out of boredom other than just eating? All right, now I want to get into some other lessons of things that surprised me. One of the things that surprised me probably the most was how much milk I actually had. I had a chronic oversupply with my first child, and I'll get into why. But leading into this, you see these things online, and I vividly remember coming across infographics on how to pump your milk on a schedule to build up your freezer stash, which in hindsight are actually very damaging, but both because they imply that you need a big freezer stash to begin with. If you're not spending any time away from your baby, you do not need an endless freezer stash. I actually ended up donating probably 90% of my stash before it expired, which very many women are in need of and appreciate. So that's okay too. If you want to be able to do that's great, but you don't have to have that much milk backed up. But also because increasing your pumping frequency communicates to your brain that your baby is nursing significantly more, and it upregulates milk production. Yes, it boosts your supply and is fine if you keep up with that pumping frequency. But if you just go back to nursing on demand, it can leave you with massive plugged ducts. And that's what happened for me. I had been experiencing recurrent plug ducts throughout my whole first 2 years breastfeeding because I was working 2 days a week. And on those days that I was working, I would pump twice, two or three times during the day. And my son would come at lunchtime to nurse. But the breastfeeding frequency did not match the pumping frequency. And I think the reason why this was the case was because other lactation consultants that I had spoken with, they said, just pump all of the milk that you have. And that was the first mistake, because I just kept making milk. I just kept having more letdowns, the more stimulation there was. In hindsight, I should have capped the amount of time that I was pumping. And the second thing is that I should have controlled the suction on the pump. What I mean by that is I was also told by a lactation consultant to only use the suction vacuum strength on the pump until it hurts, and to move it one notch down, one notch below where it hurts. I have a pretty high pain tolerance, and my perception of pain or discomfort, for better or for worse, it's great during birth and mothering and things like that. I have a lot of resilience for that, and no level of pumping was actually painful. And so that was the thing that I think led me astray, was that I had the vacuum suction level way too high on the pump. That it, like one time it actually induced mastitis while I was at work. It was like very immediate after pumping. And I've learned a lot about just how integrated your milk supply is with your frequency of breastfeeding and the frequency of being close to your baby. This, like I said, led me to having an oversupply and experiencing plugged ducts for, I think, at least 10 times in that first postpartum period. That led me to obviously researching and preparing a lot about like how to best naturally treat plugged ducts. So I have a blog post on that that I will include in the show notes here if you're interested in that and you're wondering what can I do to naturally avoid antibiotics if you do get mastitis. Because one time when I got mastitis, I shudder just thinking about it. But I was driving home and I had already started getting a fever within hours of that pumping session. And I remember crawling up the stairs in my house and going and taking a bath because I was shivering. I was so cold from this fever. And I got into a really hot bath and my whole body was shaking with pain in a hot bath, right? I felt freezing cold. My whole body was hurting. And this was the one time where I had used natural approaches to manage the symptoms of the plugged ducts. And for me, everybody has probably a different threshold or of what they're comfortable with. For me, I had been treating it naturally for, I believe, 3 days. And at the third day, it wasn't getting better. The redness had expanded and fully encapsulated, not fully encapsulated, but more than 50% of my breast was infected. It was red, painful to the touch, and the clog was not clearing. That was the one time in my entire 6 years of breastfeeding that I did take an antibiotic. And it was effective, right? It treated what was happening. Sometimes, and I don't love this, but This has been my experience. Sometimes a unnatural cause may require an unnatural solution. In this case, pumping is not a natural behavior, a natural way of removing milk from the breast. It's effective in some ways. It is nowhere near as effective as a baby is. But that was one thing that, if I could go back and really think, okay, how could I have prevented this? I 100% would have set boundaries around pumping and I am really thankful that I was prepared for what to do if I have a plugged duct, because I now have since been able to help so many other local women in my own community who are blindsided by this. And I think the thing that is blindsiding about plugged ducts and mastitis is that it's so sudden. And when it happens, you feel like your life is ending. And not only do you feel like your life is ending, but you feel like your breastfeeding relationship is on the line. And each nursing session is this urgent attempt to clear this plug duct. And I think it's been very enlightening. And in my experience, I think I do find that more and more women who are nursing on demand end up having an oversupply because they're just breastfeeding more and you're having more milk. And especially if you are taking a little bit of time away from your baby, having that extra milk really makes a big difference when it clogs up the breast. Another point that I wanted to touch on, you know, of something that really surprised me was just how intertwined my mood was with breastfeeding. Now, I touched on this in one regard in relation to feeling anxious being away from my baby earlier postpartum, but what I didn't predict would happen would be when I weaned my child, how directly impacted my mood would be. So when I had gotten pregnant with my second child and I had been breastfeeding my first child, my milk had dried up and suddenly it was gone. And when you are breastfeeding, you are getting very regular oxytocin surges, right? When you connect with your baby, oxytocin is that love hormone, right? That connection hormone that it just feels like everything is good in the world. Nothing could go wrong. It feels fireworks happening inside of your body. Like when you have an orgasm or kind of like when you give birth, it's at that level. And imagine having these regular doses of oxytocin in your daily life and then to suddenly have none. And not that you're not cuddling with your child or you're not giving kisses or whatever, the level of oxytocin that you release when you're breastfeeding compared to some of those other lesser contact forms of love is just so different. And so for me, it took quite a while to actually figure out that it was related to my reduction in milk supply and not no longer breastfeeding. My milk had dried up and pretty much like instantly my mood was just low, very low. And of course there was some confounding variables, right? It was during COVID, there was stress with working in a medical office, mandates by the government. There were a lot of things happening at that time. Social networks were getting disrupted, finding new friends, things like that. But with all of that happening, I found that my mood was so low and that pretty much anything would make me feel weepy. There would be times I would wake up and I just want to cry. And I couldn't figure it out. I couldn't pinpoint it for so long. I was telling my husband, I was like, am I not taking enough time for self-care? I had been going for walks. I had been doing the sauna. I was like, I haven't been working out as much as I normally would, but I'm still working out, right? Like when you look at what there's a lot of influencers online that I think may cause some harm in the alternative field where they say you're experiencing depression because you're inside all day and because you don't get exposed to nature and you're not sweating or you're not exercising or you're not eating well and all of these things. And those things were not the case for me. And for me, it was a very hormonally driven, neurotransmitter driven imbalance that was leading me to feeling this way. And I just want to share that because I think sometimes those online influencers can perhaps make you, they can't make you feel anything, but you may feel dismissed when you feel like you're doing everything right and still you may be feeling depressed. And that postpartum depression is often looked at as just an immediate postpartum depression, and it's not often viewed as part of the weaning process. And so I think for me, it was that very sudden drop in nursing. And some of the things that I did to help get me through that time, of course, some of those other factors I couldn't change. I really did my very best to be able to regulate my nervous system in a way that made me feel more resilient to the stressors of the time. But again, that internal imbalance was still there. And so I personally found that using saffron, the herb or the spice, depending on how you use it, was extremely helpful. I incorporated it into my food. I incorporated it into my teas and my coffee. You can take it as a supplement. There were times where I would take it as a supplement, especially in pregnancy where I wasn't drinking as much coffee. It didn't feel good for me to have much coffee. I can include a link to one of the recipes that I would have in the show notes. And I also took a tincture that my husband had formulated. I don't remember exactly which herbs were in it. I do know there was ashwagandha. I do know there was St. John's wort, and there were several other herbs. Lemon balm was one of them. Yeah, I don't remember all of them, and I don't think I have it accessible where I would be able to go back and look. He might be able to tell me. But as I began intentionally weaning my second child, I noticed the same kind of depression creeping in, feeling suddenly weepy all the time, down about everything, and feeling like everything was just harder than it was supposed to be. And so I picked up on it a lot faster this time. I used some herbal allies again, this time saffron and rhodiola. And I really slowed down on how quickly I was dropping our nursing sessions. Overall, I took about 3 to 4 months to gradually wean him. And I will say that as my milk supply has lowered because of it, I've definitely developed a strong aversion to nursing in these final weeks. I promised him our last milk would be on the night of his birthday party. And so I'm really keeping to my word. But if it was fully up to me, I'd actually be fine stopping right now. Of course, I would miss it. And particularly his just sleepy eyes when he nurses, I will never forget them. It is the sweetest thing that you can witness, is your breastfeeding baby eyes just fluttering, slowly open and slowly closed, looking up at you, and just both of you feeling like, this is exactly where I need to be. And so when I've been weaning the second child, I decided to wean him gradually. I didn't actually know how I was going to go about the weaning process because I wasn't planning to have another pregnancy to stop the milk from flowing. And I tuned in. I asked myself, I asked him, and of course, if it was fully up to him, he would keep wanting to nurse far more than we do. But for me, for my own well-being, I find, and for my own sleep, and for his sleep too, being able to sleep through the night is something we are all very much looking forward to. And I won't say that I'm sleep deprived by any means. I just go to bed earlier, and I'm prepared for that. All right, so these next couple of ones, I'm going to try to move through them a little bit faster because I'm finding that I have a lot to say about all of these points, and I don't want to take up too much of your time. This is far longer than I planned for it to be, but hopefully you're getting something from this, and I would love to hear about your experiences, just hearing what's surprising you about what you're hearing in my story, what your takeaways are. I would really love if you could message me on Instagram at Anisa Woodall Nutrition, or even just tag me in your Instagram stories and share something that you're learning. But anyway, okay. Another thing that I think surprised me is that it doesn't just not work out. There has to be a reason that your milk dries up or that breastfeeding doesn't work out. Some of the most common reasons that I've observed, either in my clients or people who I know, is that they're sleeping separate from their babies. or they're following nursing schedules instead of nursing on demand. They're not eating enough or hydrating enough or replenishing minerals and electrolytes enough. Perhaps they have low thyroid, which reduces their milk supply. Perhaps their babies have poor suck patterns due to tongue tie or other reasons. And so I just want to say this because in my experience going into motherhood, our culture told me that it's just not going to work out. And it doesn't just not work out. There's always going to be a reason, and most of them are in your control. Even with having low thyroid, for example, like you can do things to get on top of it from a diet and lifestyle perspective. I help people do it all the time. And at the same time, taking thyroid hormone is not a bad thing, right? It could, if it's a matter of allowing you to make enough milk or not, taking thyroid hormone would certainly be indicated. Of course, getting tested and making sure that it is needed first. All right, another thing that surprised me, and maybe it's a controversial topic to discuss, but when I would breastfeed, I would get very turned on for a long time. The latching and continual suckling of my baby directly stimulated blood flow to my yoni. And I'd often find my husband, especially after our first child, and we had a little bit of time after baby fell asleep, I'd often go and find my husband after putting baby to a nap. I know that some people struggle with libido while breastfeeding, but that was definitely not my experience. And I just wanted to state this because if you are listening to this or have breastfed before and you found to experience that same thing, but then you started to feel guilty. It's, oh, I'm not like, am I being turned on by my baby? No, like you're not sexually attracted to your baby. It's just how your body works. And I think it's actually a pretty great part of how the body works, because what postpartum mom doesn't want to spend more time with her husband, right? This was always a great opportunity for after baby went to nap, I was then ready for my husband, and it was awesome. Unfortunately, with our second child, our first child no longer napped, and so we'd have to get a little bit more creative. And on this note, one thing I wanted to touch on that I was surprised about was about breastfeeding in public. I saw so many posts on social media about how breastfeeding women are being reprimanded for breastfeeding in public, or that they got kicked off an airplane because they were breastfeeding on the plane, or weird things like that. Or that men were yelling at them in the mall saying, how dare you put that away, or things like that. So much so that there are whole Instagram accounts and merch and t-shirts that they sell around this whole topic of like cultural anti-breastfeeding propaganda. And I just wanted to share this in my own experience that has not been the case. And I think I was pleasantly surprised by this because especially as I was nursing my child, I found that there was times where like he wanted to nurse in the shopping cart at the grocery store or while we were out on a walk or literally doing anything, like any activity that I've ever done, I have done it breastfeeding. I think I was just surprised that the only feedback, if I did receive feedback for breastfeeding, was only positive. Like, you go, mama, or that's awesome, I breastfed my kids too, or something like that. It was only positive feedback that I was getting, if any. Like, most people just didn't say anything, and I didn't make it a big deal, and they didn't make it a big deal. I never used a nursing cover or anything. I just, like, just nursed my baby and put it away when he was done. That was about it. But I was never called out for doing it. I was never scolded for doing it. I have only ever experienced positivity around it. So if you are wanting to breastfeed and you're feeling like, oh no, but how would I feel doing it in public? Or are people going to say anything? Like, I guess it depends on where you live, but where I live in Washington, it is very much accepted. And I mean, I've also breastfed in public in Arizona and North Carolina and Florida. And I know that there are definitely like different people and different beliefs in these micro communities. But again, even in those places, I've never received any negative, even like facial expressions or feedback at all. Another thing I was surprised about was the time dedication needed to breastfeed. It's literally a full-time 24/7 on-demand job, and it's unpredictable. And I don't say this in a way to discourage anyone by any means. I think it's just to set some expectations for mothers who say they want to breastfeed and making sure that you align your life in a way to make that possible, because it's not easy to do it in the way modern society is set up. And this kind of leads me to another topic that I wanted to discuss, is that in my opinion, working full-time negates our biology. It severs the needs of mother-baby dyad and is not conducive to optimal infant development. There, I said it. As much as my feminist listeners out there want to say that women deserve the same career opportunities as men, as a general concept of equal opportunity, yes, I agree with that. But when it comes down to what's actually going to be best for our bodies, our babies, our families, and thus our communities, I very much disagree. If you want to learn more about how to protect the mother-baby dyad, I'd highly recommend the Parenting Preparation Course by Rochelle Garcia-Saliga of Innate Traditions. I'll link to it in the show notes. I have not personally taken it, as it was released after I had my babies, but I know other mothers who have taken it, and I really resonate with Rochelle's work. One of the last things that I wanted to touch on, I think I have so much more to share now that I'm thinking about it, but I want to maybe wrap it up with this one, is that I have had a complete physiological lack of desire to leave my baby, especially at night. Don't get me wrong, there were definitely times where I wanted a break or to have the weekend away with my husband. But every time I considered that, I'd get a full body no. And my child's sleep dependency, both on my milk, but also my presence, left it really off the table, at least until after weaning. We still haven't spent a night away from our first child, and he's 6 years old. And I'm not complaining by any means. That was like I'm saying, it was a full body no. Even as much as I logically wanted to do other things that the maid in me wanted to do, go to a late night concert or go to a music festival or take trips on a whim or just do different things that I wouldn't be able to do with a baby, I've found myself just wanting to say no and also welcoming the sacrifice. And I'm not saying sacrifice in a way of you have to sacrifice everything and, you know, that it's not worth it by any means. The sacrifice is a sacrifice. At the same time, it was 100% worth it. Like, I just set the expectation once I realized what biological mothering feels like and requires. I just decided, okay, I'm not going to take nights away from my baby. I'm not going to work 5 days a week and be away from my baby asking somebody else to raise it, because biologically it felt completely opposite of what in my bones I knew to be what my baby needed and what I needed for the wellness of our mother-baby dyad. I know that some people can get away with leaving their baby for a trip and pumping while they're away, and their baby takes a bottle from the other parent. But honestly, that was never something that my babies would have accepted. And I believe it takes a lot of training, going against biological cues to an extent, to get to that point. That's not a judgment. It's just an observation of reality. We had tried a couple of date nights, actually, after my son was 18 months old. And I had to go date nights, meaning like we went out, came back, and tried to go to sleep by ourselves. And had to go back around 1 or 2 a.m. because he was frantically crying. And if he did go back to sleep, he would wake up every 10 minutes. And it was not serving anyone. And now that we're wrapping up breastfeeding, for me, I'm excited. I feel like I have been able to give my children the very best gift. Not only nurturing their ability to love and feel loved, but to nurture their microbiome, to help them to develop a healthy palate, oral facial structure, to help them learn about boundaries with eating. There's so many different reasons why we can breastfeed, and the nutrition is only one part of it. But now that I'm on the other side, right, I'm 6 years in of breastfeeding my first child for 3 years and now breastfeeding my second child for 3 years, I'm excited to have a little bit more time away. And it's not like I'm going to be separate from my children. The way I look at it is it's like the cord is getting just a little bit longer, right? It's like if you imagine the cord attached to your baby and at some point it either falls off or you cut it off. And that radius just gets a little bit longer the older your child gets. But really that ending of the breastfeeding relationship is, you know, it does sever that cord quite a bit. And hopefully when this episode releases, I will have wrapped up my 3 years of breastfeeding. And I have actually my first solo trip planned away. I'm going to be going to the Free Birth Society's Matriarch Rising Festival in the summer solstice time. And I feel so ready. I get a full body yes. And I know that my child is mature enough to understand that I will come back. And he's developed enough sleep associations to be able to navigate sleep with my husband, although we still haven't had a night away to experiment with how he will handle that. I know he will, though, and it's his only option at this point. I think we will both be stronger and happier when I get back.
Thank you so much for listening to me reflect on and share my story of the years of breastfeeding that I spent with my children. My hope is that the takeaway here is the mindset shift that you need to undergo to be able to mother in alignment with your physiology. And to know that the number one thing to listen to at this point in your overall health and wellness journey is your intuition. I highlighted some of the factors that can lead to difficulty breastfeeding or possible reasons why it may not be successful. And like I said, many of those things are preventable. They are in your control. There are obviously going to be things that are not, and this is not to place judgment on anyone, but to reflect that, okay, there are so many things that are in control. How can we take action on those things so that when you enter into motherhood, you can truly feel you are fully set up and equipped to be able to not only breastfeed your baby, but to nourish your baby? This is one of the reasons why I place so much emphasis on the preconception period, because you are building up your nutrient stores. You are building up your mindset, your resilient mindset. You are learning how to listen to your intuition in this time. You're balancing your hormones, right? Like I mentioned, low thyroid can be a reason for low milk supply. If you correct your low thyroid and balance your hormones in the preconception time, then you don't have to worry about that when time comes, right? You've already set yourself up for success. And setting up yourself for success is not only taking action with your food, it's your mindset, it's your lifestyle, it's your habits, it's what is your home life like? There's so many different ways to encourage healthy, optimal preconception preparation. And I hope that this conversation has shown you some of the areas where you may need to be making some adjustments in your life, right? If you are working a full-time job and expect to return back to that full-time job, but you also say that you want to mother in alignment with your physiology and breastfeed your child, I think it takes a little bit of reflection and saying, okay, how am I going to make these two things happen? and something does have to have a compromise, right? Hopefully, if you are one of those people who is going to continue working, hopefully you can find some flexibility, right, within your work to be able to be there for your baby and your family in the ways that it truly needs. And so, again, I don't want these reflections to be received as judgment for the way that you are doing things. I want you to look at my experience and to be able to pull out the wisdom of those experiences and to be able to implement the lessons that you needed into your own life to be able to then enter into your own resilient motherhood journey.
And now it's your turn. Restore your fertility, conceive naturally with confidence, and grow your healthy baby.
If you want to learn more about how you can support your fertility, check out my free masterclass, Unlock Your Fertility, How to Transform Your Habits for Optimal Pregnancy Success. And if you're ready to have my step-by-step strategy for how to personalize your own preconception protocol so you can conceive your dream baby on your own timeline, it's time for you to join me in Resilient Motherhood. Click the link in the show notes to join. I hope to see you there. Thank you so much for listening today. I really do appreciate you choosing to spend this time with me. If you gained value from today's episode, I'd love if you can act in reciprocity and share this episode with a friend. Screenshot your favorite part to share on your social media, tagging me at Anisa Woodall Nutrition, and leave a review in Apple Podcasts. This serves me to expand my reach of connecting with women who need this medicine. I'll see you on the next one. I hope you already know, but for legal purposes, I need to share that this podcast is for general informational and educational purposes only and does not constitute the giving of medical advice. The use of this information and the materials linked to this podcast are at the user's own risk. Each user is responsible for making their own decisions when it comes to their reproductive health. Remember, you are always the sole authority over your health, and if your case requires medical attention, use your own discretion to ensure that your needs are met. Thank you for listening.